6 o'clock. It is Wednesday, June 18th. Call the administration community meeting to order. As I said, it's now 6:01. We have in the room Seaver Tarulis, Alderman Seaver Tarulis, Alderman Transier, Alderman Soling, myself. We have staff in person, as well as guests. We have one of our consultants on here. Ken Koch is also online. I know he's going to be listening in on item. So we'll start with citizens' comments. No one in the room and no one online. Minutes for correction from November 16, 2022. Any comments? We'll take those as presented. We are going to move number 7 up to number 1. So we're going to go through the residential, electric, aggregation, and solar proposals first, since we do have Chris here for that. So who's going to take this to start? Bart?
Yeah, I'll start. So the purpose of this really is to just give you the, I'm going to call them, preliminary aerials of sites that we've vetted at the staff level, think could work out, and, give you a chance to opine on some of the higher level, discussion points on each site. And my caveat is obviously these are preliminary. They would have to go through and do design engineering if we approve the contract. So the coverages, the locations may change as a result of that. And then initially we've got our just normal, city council review approval process and everything else. So we'll do the easy ones first, and then we'll get into the more complex ones later. So the library one, just to give you an idea, I have briefed Shelley on this, which shows, arrays on all the roofs of the building. And, basically they're going to have to sign off on it, obviously, in order to do it. So they won't do that probably until February. And I would ask them, in the context of all of our staff level reviews, to, put it through their same staff level review and then talk about it with the board. And then the savings that are projected here are upper end savings. So they were given to us a few months ago. So things changed with the energy markets. Then also the final layout that we put up there will be dependent not only on coverage, but also just, updates on, I'm assuming, sunlight analysis and all these other things that the solar companies will do as we get closer to actual construction. So that's kind of like a ballpark annual savings. So with this one, just to give you an idea of like how we're reviewing this at the staff level, our initial comments were just, people saying you probably want pathways every 50 feet or so, that way you can access different parts of the building, and then, there's various ducts and exhausts through the roof of the building, and they would expect, obviously, that as we design them, we either miss those or provide access to them so that it's not an issue long term, which is, I'm assuming is a standard component of the construction review process as we get a little bit closer to it. Okay, so there's that one. And not too much of a question there for now, at least, other than this is the status of where that sits. So Prairie Point, this gives us our first high-level opportunity here. So this is the vacant lot that we bought next to our building. So the actual building is here, here's the garage. So we've got just over an acre here of vacant property. So the question is, do we want to lock up this property with a solar array in any format for between 15 and 25 years? The way I understand it is it's a 25-year commitment in general. The contract with the solar arrays should be on that property. But after 15 years, you're allowed to buy them out basically with some financial penalty. So, and then obviously anything before then, if we ran into an emergency situation, would be litigated or potentially in our penalty or stuck in the court system if we try to get it through. So I really want to make sure that when we propose these things that you guys have discussed and vetted the concept of, do we think that we're going to need this property for 15 to 25 years, or are we good with basically recouping some of our investment via solar and making ourselves a little bit of money process. So here, a couple of the design features, just to be talked through a little bit on the staff level, is, this is a lower lying area than the parking lot, so we would have to accommodate for some drainage potentially. we probably recommend, you know, like maybe that some of the maintenance is either guaranteed within the contract or negotiated with staff, so that we know how often it's going to be mowed or if there's something else we can do so it's not mowed. You know, Pete had suggested, I think, that you know, we do like a fence 6 inches off the ground instead of on the ground, something to do with like being able to easily mow it or maintain it versus you know, having to mow against the fence line. You know, that there's proper underlayment, maybe do some pea gravel is one of the thoughts possibly. Then the question here, besides whether we want it on this property and basically lock it up or not, is like, do we want to put up a fence? So, you know, we made Kendall County put up an opaque fence on all four sides of their property. The one that we're discussing off of Beecher Road is farther away from area residents, so we're recommending no fence or a chain link fence there, basically, so easily to see through. So the question is, you know, we have homes, they're a few hundred feet up here, and I'll pull up an aerial in a second, you know, but they are removed, there's a park, and then there's homes. And then there's businesses. So this here is the preschool adjacent to our building. So, you know, is that a concern, you know, at all for, you know, aesthetics, or is it just put up a fence and as long as the kids are out of the solar array property, it's fine. So that's something to think about here too. Additionally, you know, we talked through like access points. So the driveway and the secure areas of parking lot that is here in this property, and then the front parking lot, which is not in the secure area, that ends here. So, you know, trying to manage the process of saying, you know, you can access the site this area, you know, preferably, and that this would still have a gate, and it does currently, the fence that was constructed, so that we can actually just push snow off into this area, and maybe leaving, you know, enough buffer so that we can pile snow here without much of an issue. And again, those are, you know, detailed level things that we would get into with the company if we get there. So that being the first one, does anybody have any questions or comments about this property?
So, okay, it's our second. Anybody have any questions on the library one? I think that one's kind of straightforward.
Yeah.
Prairie Point, any questions on the additional on the lot? I'll say this one to me is not ideal because of the lock on the property for 15 years guaranteed and then 25 potentially. It doesn't seem to be most efficient. The parcel to the immediate east of us is zoned residential. There's actually entitlements on it. So if we did this, we wouldn't want to fence it. We'd probably want to make sure that, you know, the adjacent uses aren't hindered. But I'm not keen on this piece of property for a solar farm. I'm just not sure it really fits as well as some of the others might.
The
they might be the only worry. The real reason that was actually put in was it was a sand pit. They mined the site and then just kind of sculpted it around and put proposed development. So that's really the only reason it's there today. So otherwise, it would have been built.
Any other initial thoughts or questions on this property?
I think Menards are going to have a hard time developing the remaining lots of Prairie Meadows, which would really be affected by this.
Okay. So, do you remember how big the one in Kent County was?
It was 2 megawatts, or about 7 acres.
Okay. So this would be just over an acre, comparatively. The one in Kendall County had residents immediately backed up to it. This one, it's a few hundred feet away, but yeah, I mean, that's part of the discussion.
You said it was 2 megawatts?
2 megawatts, yeah.
And this is probably, so it's 330 kWh, is that correct?
Yes.
So.
330 kW, I think. Let me just verify that.
Yeah,
240 kW. So roughly a tenth of the size.
One tenth of the size production.
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, I will say one thing, if I can. One reason why this is important is because this helps keep your costs down for what's going to, you're going to see on the canopy sites, which are obviously a lot more expensive to put up. So that does drive the economics, but we've got that factored in there.
When we talk about that, when we look at this 1651 ground and then we look at the canopy, are the numbers we're seeing in terms of their savings, are they separate or is there a crossover?
It's all aggregate.
It's all aggregate.
Yeah.
Okay.
So they went out and put together what the total cost would be, put together what your price, your PPA would be, which is lower than what you're paying currently, obviously. And that's how the savings.
Okay. So the savings will fluctuate depending on what we choose.
Yep.
Okay. Appreciate that.
Any other feedback on this site? Okay. Moving on. We've got, let's skip that one for now, the canopy. We'll come back to it next. The next two are summer related. So we've got Tremont, south side near Raintree. So this is actually an open farm field. It contemplates subdivision south of there, and then you got Winnet Ridge over here and portions of Ashen Point over here, or Prestwick, or wherever the Yorkville Christian High School is. So this site actually, we've got the paved parking lot here that go to the tennis courts, and then you've got the water tower. We'll need to expand and acquire additional property on this site, likely for the Lake Michigan project. So we will probably need to discuss with the property owner to the south about buying some of this to be able to add a bunch of additional land and put 2 groundwater storage tanks on there. So we've talked through that at the staff level. It would make sense, potentially, if we're acquiring land, to offset maybe some of the cost, to actually buy more land, put more ground storage tanks down there, and then build, water utility with some solar to offset those costs down there. So that's something that would have to be done later. So these, this is a canopy above the parking lot, which we think is doable. We didn't have really any issue with that. They've designed it for a 12-foot, I believe, or it would need to be a 12-foot canopy. So that our snowplows and stuff can get under there and still work. And then everything else on the south side here would have to be reconfigured at some point or another. But this is a relatively small array compared to what we could potentially do if we had to buy additional property. So that's one additional site here. Any questions about this one?
Thoughts? I have one. This, as a canopy, kind of perplexes me. We have a permeable parking lot, and we're going to put a canopy over it. Defeats the purpose of the very expensive parking lot that we have in place.
It wouldn't function as a direct, you know,
it would no longer function as a permeable parking lot. So that we put this parking lot in for that purpose, and then we're going to take it away and cover it, and then it's just direct runoff. Doesn't make sense to me. I get it's an ideal cover, but it's the only permeable parking lot we have in the city. We're going to remove its functionality. So if we look to do more land, I would consider doing maybe more arrays here or something, because I think there's benefit to these removal. But that one just perplexes me.
Okay, and if we got rid of it, it would drive down the cost, obviously.
Yeah. So. But if we can take it and put it on maybe the expanded site, if we do that, just replace it somewhere else, maybe. That's my thought.
It makes more sense.
Yeah. I guess my only counter to that would be if you put a canopy above it, it would lengthen the life of the pavers. I mean, yes, it would defeat the purpose of collecting direct rain, but I'm assuming some drainage might still be useful. And no? You don't think so?
I mean, yeah, it's a great idea to have covered parking, but it's also, I work out here in the mornings. That would be fantastic for rainy mornings to be working out down there at the park, but.
All right, any other questions or comments on this site? Okay, so. No water utility site here, so this is Bristol Ridge and Kennedy. We've got our well here, and then this is all farm and conservation prairie area. So this land is donated to the city as part of the Grand Reserve Development Agreement. So we've got a smaller ground-mounted array north of the well, which is right at the corner here. So we think that's a no-brainer. The one thing that we did know when we were reviewing it is part of this is in the floodplain. Which might not be an issue, so we're taking a list of regulatory issues under our stormwater ordinance, and we'll see what happens there with that. So this one is adjacent to residential, across the street, and a golf course, a few houses. So again, the same fence in question would apply, whether we want to address that or not.
Thoughts on that from Bristol Ridge?
It's the best spot. Other than the library roof so far.
Yeah,
I do.
Natural corridor that's in floodplain. I mean, I know we're trying to find it. So this power system, as we're coming, does this intend to power or provide power to the well, or is it just going into the system?
Would it be direct, or would it be, I thought it goes into the grid, then we just get an offset.
No, it goes straight.
Okay.
Yeah, the reason why, that's why the proximity.
Gotcha.
Right. Because it goes offset, you're lowered on the well.
Mm-hmm.
Furthermore, what it does is, you get charged on your electric by how much you use it, when you use it, time of day, and peak use. It obviously, when the grid is at peak, is when the sun's out and when everybody else is at peak. So anything you can do to reduce that really helps lower your electric bill.
So this is probably something we directional for under the creek to get the line.
Yeah, they'll do it. I mean, and what the other nice thing about it, I know it seems counterintuitive putting electric by water, but they build it up, over the site, and it's a site that nothing's going to go in there.
Yep.
So it's really unusable land. So actually, a lot of the Army Corps of Engineers have liked those sites because it's reusing a wetland, basically.
Well. I get that. I also look at it as this is a rather pristine area in terms of it's a wetland floodplain. There's a lot of natural benefits to it, but then you come in and for our maintenance purposes, we're either going to have to do a prairie grass under it that's low profile, or we're going to have to gravel it, which is not ideal for this area. You know, I'm about preserving this the Black River Creek corridor, so it's a challenging one. I can see the benefit to offsetting the load on the well for the electrical system. So,
any concerns about fencing? So the areas of black and squirrel oaks here near Blackberry Creek are homes. They're probably a few hundred feet away. So, but it is open prairie between the two. No concern there.
I mean, probably be better off to landscape along First Stone Ridge than putting a fence up, unless a certain form of alderman raises a stink.
This area will be built out here, but this is a, so there will be houses here eventually. This is an open area, and this is an open area. So we, you know, we could potentially approach the Grand Reserve HOAs or whoever owns that particular one, some different units within there, about having to acquire additional property to be able to do this. But our property is fenced and runs right there. You can kind of see it. And for whatever reason, I think there's utilities or something over here, so it didn't make sense to put them on this side of the property. Any fencing concerns on that?
You said that one's already fenced?
It's fenced with like a chain link. So yeah, so you can see through it. I guess that's like the big thing. It's like, I think all the sites by the standards of the solar ground barrier want to be securely, you know, fenced in. It's just whether we want to make it opaque or not. Is more of a question.
Probably, if anything, the south side of it.
Okay.
Maybe part, you know, maybe a slight return on the corners.
But all the savings analysis includes chain link fence.
Chain link.
Yep.
So assume chain link.
So if we went to a solid
if
wood
you
fence,
upgrade, then
we need to go. Yeah. Okay.
Okay. Any other questions or comments about this site? Okay, so now I'm going to go back up to the more complex one, which is Prairie Point, all our canopies. And I know I had talked through this with everybody, you know, several months ago. This concept form. So here's like the existing, you know, drawing. So the fence and secure access to the parking is somewhere here. So it would split this drive lane down the middle. So some of this would actually be in a secure area. Some of it would be. We are talking through that internally. Both me and Jim actually like the concept. We think it's progressive just in the environmental benefits and the cost savings, but then also for the squad parking and employee parking, we would be covered to a certain degree. So the challenges with that obviously are snow plowing becomes more difficult. Portions of the drive, the parking lot, especially in the secure area, may have to be torn up or at least minimally impacted to do footings for each canopy. You might lose a couple parking spots here and there, depending on where you're going to put those footings. We just repaved it. And then obviously, when we go through to repave that, hopefully, decades from now because it's lasted so long, but more likely, you know, 10 or 15 years from now, the cost of repaving it would actually probably increase maybe $100,000, $150,000 is what they're thinking. So some of that would eat into our savings because we have to hire specialized equipment. So one of the things we're looking at is, you know, are there abilities to make canopies in other parts of the property? You know, can we minimize maybe some of the areas where it's more difficult, you know, and size it appropriately? But that's all into the design basis. So, okay, so here's our vacant lot to the northeast, which might have ground-mounted arrays, and then we've got all these canopies here up and around the building. It does provide a pretty substantial savings because we've got a fair amount of area there, and that's the proposal currently. So, so it is 12, so we did pick the 12 feet canopies so that trucks can get under there. The interior canopies, which are quite large, so, and these two right here, so immediately back of the building. There is a parking lot, there are parking spaces in the dry lane here, so it's not connected to the building, it's a little bit off the. We're talking about putting lights actually in there, so that way during the day when it's less lit, there's not a darkness issue there. But obviously at night it's a little bit better lit up, so that might increase the cost a little bit. And let's see here, and everything else that we talked about I mentioned, so paving, patching, you know, all the construction issues that you get to deal with there. So this has kind of got the same conversation. You know, you're several hundred feet away from residences, you know, you can't really fence these because they're, you know, a structure basically. A parking lot, like, are there any aesthetic concerns there? Do we like the concept? You know, those types of things.
Is there any concerns about icing and sheets of ice lighting?
Yes, that would be managed off of the, you know, design process when they actually do the construction, and Pete and Steve had identified that. One of the things we'd already talked to Chris about is like the actual pitch of the roofs, you know, trying to make the ones that are the rear of the parking lot adjacent to like the, you know, the swales and stuff to pitch backwards to the extent that they can so that the drainage goes off into the natural areas rather than the parking lot. Some of these though, because of the need to, you know, catch the sun rays and how the arrays are actually constructed, may have to be pitched into the parking lot. I think it's like this one, maybe this one here, if I remember correctly. But it was a few of them. So something that we would have to manage to the extent that we could design that way during the review process, we would. But yeah, that was something that raised as a potential issue or something to watch for.
In those instances, has it been discussed about some type of a gutter system where you can pipe it towards the back? Even if you have to pitch towards the front.
Yeah.
Towards the back.
Yep. They would look at that too. So, and my very elementary understanding of how these would be constructed would be, you know, basically like a pitched flat roof, and, you know, that you put the arrays on top of them. So, so they would have some sort of drainage system where we would look to have that so that it would be, you know, directed towards the drainage areas. Some of them may not function that way.
So these roofs would probably have a gutter system potentially to them, or it would be I assume, I don't know a lot about these panels. Are there gaps between the panels when they're put together, or they?
Yes.
So if you're looking at an array of panels, this is, the interior ones are 36 to 40 feet in depth. So are the panels like 3 feet? You get maybe a couple inch gap, 3 feet, couple inch gap?
Yeah, this is not a totally solid structure, so you are going to get water. You know, I was going to bring that up on your paper parking. There will be water coming down in between the panels. It's not, you know, the majority of the water, because the majority of the water will run off, but it's not a totally sealed structure.
But it, I think you said, Bart, it's a roof with the panels on top. Is that correct?
Some of them are that way, and some of them are just like this metal, like, frame, and then you put the panels on top.
Yeah, it's a metal frame, but it's not a solid metal frame.
Correct. But some of those interior are basically like a shed roof. Are they where it's flat and then the panels are on top of that?
Which ones?
Some of the canopies here. The design that I saw looked like it was like a shed roof, you know, or like a lean-to roof.
Yeah.
And then the metal brackets are off the top of them, and they erase it above. So it's like a roof with a frame on top and then the rail.
Yes.
Okay. So it is basically a double system for the cannons.
Yes. Yeah, so some of them can have drainage components, some of them won't be.
Right.
So the ground-mounted ones are just your traditional. Now, are those tracking? The ground-mounted ones, are we planning those to be tracking versions?
Those were not tracking. Those were...
They're fixed.
Same-lags. They were not same-lags, stationary.
Stationary.
Yeah.
And so this is not like the proposal we heard the other night, where those are tracking motor systems. This, everything on our proposal will be stationary.
Right.
Okay, that makes sense. I mean, I was wondering if the ground ones would track.
Yeah.
But that's, I'm sure, a lot more cost and not viable product for us.
No, I think it's something you can do. We did that at Kendall County, and I can ask. It allows you to be able to increase production, but there's a lot of variables in some of the water sites, so those might be in roof mounts anyway on top of the new water structure and not be at ground.
Really, so some of those ground mounts may just disappear and go on roof anyways.
Right, exactly.
Okay. Some breaker points, obviously potential changes to the parking lot down the road, jumping packs, all things that could be accommodated. We put the conduit in the ground for this one. So we
We planned for it and they ended up not doing it at the last minute because of the there was some issue with the generator and the assumption they made didn't work out. So we figured out after though, all is lost. You can directionally moor these things, with minimal impact to the parking lot. So we thought through it, but that ended up not working out.
Because we had planned for that money to go in.
Yep.
So we haven't expended it, so those kind of things would make sense. The only two areas I don't really care for on this one are the ones right adjacent to Prairie Point Drive. Other than that, I think this one has a canopy for the betterment of City Hall and our parking and our fleet is helpful. Since they're generally a flat roof here, it's a completely different look than a ground-mounted, angled solar panel. This is going to look like a canopy. I'm not as concerned about this one. There's actually quite a bit of landscape screening between this and the park. This one's further away from the residence. I'm generally okay with this one. I like the idea. I like the savings on it. I don't want it right up on the road there, though. But I think this one has a lot of potential for us, even with the impacts of the columns that'll be in the parking lot. I assume we'd have to probably lose some of our light standards in the parking lot and replace them, like you said, with the underlighting.
Yeah.
So, all things to be vetted. So, this one probably has benefit.
I like this one more than putting it on the vacant lot. Immediately east of the parking lot. Mm-hmm.
Okay. Any other feedback?
All I'm getting is flack.
From Prairie Meadows residents? Okay. Is it aesthetic related, or is it just that they don't...
It's not only what we're looking at, but it's kind of... the city's going to allow it, then people are going to want it on their roofs in our subdivision, and there's nothing in our bylaws that prevent that from happening, and so you guys are not being very, very good to Prairie Meadows HOA, which I am no longer affiliated with.
Okay, now you can be outside of
I just, I listen as their alderman.
Gotcha. Okay, that's good feedback.
Can I ask a question? Does the city have an ordinance on solar?
Yeah.
Sure, the grove says nothing on the front of your house.
Yeah, we do, and I don't know that that specifically is a characteristic of it. In general, anything on a building is permitted within certain size standards, and anything ground mounted requires a special use. which would allow for residents in the area to make comments like that, and then for us to tweak it and make the project better. So we'll see.
I mean, technically, our ordinance says that all solar panels need to be mounted 10 feet off the ground.
Also true. Yeah.
We have made exceptions to that because that is not realistic for solar farms. The thought when that was written was it's like a satellite dish.
Yeah.
The old dishes that were
right
up in the air. So there are things like that that do exist in our ordinance. Any other thoughts on the solar? I have a question. In terms of the areas that we looked at and explored, Bridge Park is not an option at the moment. It's not something that we consider. There is the large land mass on the east side with the lighting and the concessions building. Any thought, any reason that was not?
Where's it at?
It's the west of Lincoln Crossing, like Mill and Kennedy. I don't remember seeing a plan for that. I know it was in the list of facilities,
exactly.
So I'm wondering if the solar company looked at it and decided that the layout or the size or the sun there.
It's one of the largest land masses we have.
Yeah.
Yeah, you're talking about where the
ball
fields are.
Yeah.
That's
all
right.
What I thought they were talking about.
Keep in mind these are behind the meter fields, which are going to be supplying power to the area. So the ones proposed here are going to supply, obviously, Prairie Point, and then the water tower ones are supplying water towers. They're just not using up by the ball fields to that magnitude that it would supply that. Now, if you've got, 7 to 20, 30 acres, you could look at what they call a community solar field.
And push it back in.
And push it back into the grid.
Yeah.
And that would yield you roughly, the going rate is between like $1,500 to $2,000 an acre.
Okay.
A year.
So our the use of the lights in the concessions building,
it's
there's
just
no
not,
gen, no benefit to it.
Yeah, we did look. We actually did look at that. It's just
okay.
It's very, it's minimal.
That makes sense, because yeah, I was thinking about that one. Would have expected to see something there. And so that would have the same kind of thoughts as Bristol Bay Park, but then our water tower on the north side, I assume with our long-term plan on water storage, that maybe was a factor as to why that one wouldn't have had solar. Because when we go to ground tank storage, we're doing a couple locations of the ground tanks. I don't recall Bristol Bay's water tower having a ground tank associated with that.
Correct.
So
yeah, we'll only need probably
so that would get,
2 to 4.
So that would get decommissioned, but we do have a pump there.
Correct.
So is that, that site's not included?
Bristol Bay water tower, do you remember what the...
Bristol, is that off 47?
Yes.
You know,
very far north end.
We never looked at that one.
Okay.
I don't know why, but we never did. I just drove by it again today, and I didn't see it on the map, and I wonder, why we never did look at that one.
Maybe it's because we store all our picnic tables there.
Those are very valuable.
That,
you're saying that's going to be decommissioned anyway?
The water tower, once we implement it.
So, I mean, the facility probably won't change much, and we probably have to expand it. I'm wondering if maybe it's not large enough or something. I don't know. But
no, it looks like a lot of houses around.
Yeah.
Condos.
Yeah, condos.
Yeah.
I don't know if that's there. But we can add that to the list if you want us to take a look at it.
Yeah.
Obviously.
I mean, if it's beneficial to us in the long term, and fencing is the condition we have to do with it, maybe that's something. I mean, these are the kind of things that I'm looking at. I'm surprised that they weren't in the packet. So.
Yeah, all the other ones that we saw that we ruled out just because of functionality were like, smaller buildings, like pump houses and stuff. Mm-hmm. They can stick a solar panel on there and it'll save us, I think it was like $1,000 or $2,000 a year. But, you have a roof that needs to be replaced in like 4 years or 5 years, we said. It's just not going to be worth it because it's going to, cause an issue there. So there were a few of those that were ruled out. But nothing of major consequence.
Is Bristol Bay landlocked?
There there's vacant farm field to the southwest and north.
But it's the city's property?
No.
Yeah, I mean, that might have been the reason why, it's because of the footprint might not be big enough to put the solar, but I'll check into it and get an answer.
Okay. Because, yeah, it's a nice square.
Yeah.
And, yeah, there's a commercially zoned piece to the west. That's the only piece that's not developed.
I get you.
Okay. So, where do we go from here, Mark?
Thanks for your feedback. We still have a lot of additional thinking to do, and then we also have to negotiate the contract and get all that done. So, we will bring it forward either to this committee or city council as soon as we can. It won't be in January, maybe in February. A lot of moving pieces here. So.
What do you expect from the library board?
My recollection was they had actually asked us to make sure that they were included in that as a way to save money. And that had actually might have even been, before a few members were in place. So I think they were interested in the cost savings. Jelly seems relatively positive on them. So
I really like theirs because the three rooms, there's only one that has three vents on it. Otherwise, the area they're showing, the only thing you're going to have to put in is mechanical and, the mechanical for the system and pathways.
Yep.
Otherwise, there are no penetrations through that building.
Yep.
That roof.
That's
the most efficient.
They've had problems with their roof.
Well, this will be the opportunity to fix it, and then you work with it. You're going to have people up there.
Yeah, well, I don't think it's not just the roof, but, they put up, snow guards on there, and they're complaining about the trees and the leaves on the roof.
Don't worry. This is a topic I have for additional business.
Okay.
All right. Thanks. Okay. Great. We'll get on. I'll get you started. Thank you, Chris. Thanks for all your time, guys.
Okay. Moving on. I'll go back to the beginning. Admin 2023-01 budget reports for November 22 and December 22.
Yeah, I won't go over everything on sales tax. We're still close to budget estimates. What we're starting to see, though, is we've got 3 or 4 months in a row where the actual has come in slightly, less than recent historical averages, obviously, a double-digit growth year over year, but missing slightly our projected models based on historical. So we're talking about, $4,000 or $5,000 here or there in a month. So we're not projecting a shortfall under the budget projections and actuals yet, but we've definitely seen a stabilization of the revenue stream. It's not growing exponentially anymore, so it definitely has flattened and become more normal. So and those inflationary increases that we budgeted for, remember, are 2 and 3%. So when inflation is at 9%, or it's, I guess now it's 6%, month over year over year, that just shows that we're actually a little bit behind where normal inflation would go. So we're seeing a little bit of the clawback, I think, of some of the pandemic spending locally.
Okay. Questions, comments? Appreciate that. Informational item. Next one, admin 2023-02, treasurer's reports for November 22, December 22.
For the month ended November 30th, 2022, beginning fund balance of $27,366,832, yearly revenues of $29,432,368, yearly expenses of $26,624,138, for a projected ending fund balance of $30,175,062. For the month ended December 31st, 2022, beginning fund balance of $27,400,675, year-to-date revenues of $34,148,203, year-to-date expenses of $35,656,150, for a projected ending fund balance of $25,892,727.
Questions or comments on the treasurer's reports? Thank you, Rob. We would move that to the consent agenda. Admin 2023-03, cash statements for September 2022 through November.
These are informational, as always. On the front page is our cash balances throughout the various funds and bank accounts of the city. Second page is our investments. I just wanted to kind of mention as an aside, with interest rates changing the way they have, it's kind of unfortunate when we're out to issue debt, but it has benefited us on the revenue side. Last year we did about $25,000 in interest earnings. Rates were so poor, we're getting like 2, maybe 5 basis points. Now it's kind of getting back to normal in the 3 to 4% range. I expect overall interest earnings for the city to be north of $300,000 this year.
Wow.
So,
and what are you doing with that, Rob?
What's that?
What are we doing with that, Rob?
Well, both of it goes to the general fund, so we'll be discussing that, I guess, more around the budget process.
I think we got a couple projects to fill, though.
Yeah.
Any questions regarding the cash statements?
No.
As Rob said, those are informational. And then, admin 2023-04, review of invoices between $5,000 and $25,000. We have 4 months, November, December, actually 2 in December and January. So this was a add-on to our monthly reporting, or actually, what are we doing, bi-monthly? Or did we decide to do it monthly?
We're doing it monthly, yeah. It's every city council meeting we're generating it. So
they are there, so you can see a little more detail as to what the authorizations are for this range. Any questions on any of these? We've had a chance to look through them. Appreciate you guys doing this. We can look through those. Those are informational. Admin 2023-05 website reports for November 2022 and December 2022.
Aaron? You have both reports in your packet. I'd be happy to answer any questions regarding them. December is our December, January is where we kind of dip down because we don't have any events going on, but it'll ramp back up towards the summer months. We are embarking on our redesign process. Next month, I should be able to bring you a mood board and a proposed layout for our new design.
Thank you. Questions? Did I recall from a couple months back that we were starting to receive analytics from a different source?
Yeah.
How is that going?
We are now doing Google rather than Keybit.
And are we, everything is good with that? Good with the data that we're getting? Okay. Good. All right. Moving on, Admin 2023-06, Ordinance Amending the Yorkville City Code, Title 3, Chapter 7, Section 3-7-2, Solicitors, Hawkers, and Itinerant Merchants.
So, we had the Girl Scouts contact us in the fall and said, we're going to be going door to door, and we're just letting you know unless you call us and tell us otherwise, which, you know, generally doesn't work out from a municipal code enforcement perspective. But we accommodated them and said, no problem. When we were checking the code, though, we realized that even Girl Scouts are technically supposed to be like registered as a solicitor, door-to-door itinerant merchant, so they're supposed to get a license. That was not the case in a prior code that we had probably 5-10 years ago. We tried to look up to see if that was a conscious decision for us to change it based on an issue, or if that was just an oversight. We changed it, couldn't determine it. When we talked to Jim, he seemed okay with basically reverting back to allowing, you know, Girl Scouts and Boy Scouts and kids to go door-to-door selling school things. So we've drafted a code amendment that would basically remove, you know, the requirements to get a license for anybody that's actually a nonprofit, or, you know, and if you're under 18, you have to let us know, or 14, excuse me, you know, who you're going to be going door-to-door with. When I talked to Chris prior to the meeting, he had suggested maybe that we tighten that up a little bit. We have no objection to that. We just looked at it and said the Girl Scouts probably should be able to go door to door without having a license. So here's one solution. So I think Chris, you and I talked. You said maybe tailor it so that anybody under 18
Well, kind of the thought is you get these kind of groups, Boy Scouts, Girl Scouts. They're going, they're kids. There might be a small pack. They're moving along. The 14 and under, that kind of makes sense for that type of group. Now let's talk about the schools. You have high schoolers that do go door to door. Are we going to background check and have them register as a solicitor going door to door to try to sell, whether it's the cards or chocolates, pizzas, whatever it is for the flavor of the week? So when we have this as a 501c3, well, the school district is not 501c3, but they are. And this is where there's a difference of a school-sponsored event as compared to maybe the Reds. or one of the other sports groups that are private groups, because those are not not-for-profits.
Some of them are.
There are some. You have some that you have that classified, but most of them, they, you know. How do we want to consciously be good with the community in terms of allowing some of this and not being overburdensome, but also making sure that, you know, if there's a kid at the high school, he is 18, going and trying to do a fundraiser for school, he's not having to do a background check. How do we make this equitable, balance it? Because, yeah, this is clearly an oversight. Any thoughts?
Make them all their background checks. 12, 13, 18? I see a lot of punks at the courthouse at 14, 15 years old.
Yeah, it doesn't matter. Do we want to do it? Do we want to...
Kidding.
No, no, but like there's the range. 14, I think 14 is a good age. If you're 16, 17, 18, I mean, if you've got a legitimate reason to be out there as part of a group, I want to try to work an exception.
Well, I think you're right. You include in kids doing school fundraising activities. Mm-hmm. If they're for the band, for the football team, when they're selling the cards, you know, you can get money off at Rosati. So I think it's good having the non-profit organizations, but also putting something in there for school-sanctioned fundraising events.
And now, is there a way, you know, we've got that D badge for our licensed persons. Is there a way for that organization to get in touch with the city and say, hey, we're going to be doing this? You know, you've acknowledged that, yes, you have a group going through the whether it's the Girl Scouts or the school. So we have an idea. We know that that's happening. So that when we get a call to the police department, I just had these kids coming through and they're selling all this stuff in my yard. Well, they are, we've got an application for them to be coming through. Is there a way to head that off?
Oh, you're still going to get the complaints.
You're going to get the complaints, but at least we can say, yes, we know about it.
Yeah.
They do fall within, they're legitimate.
Yeah, I guess you could say they notified us, they gave us the appropriate paperwork, we verified it with the school.
Yeah, it's just more or less a notification
process.
Is that something that would be overburdensome, Bart? Or
no. I think that's probably the way to go. So 14 under, no requirements at all. No notification, we're good with that. Okay, and then, like, school, I'm going to leave age out of it.
Right.
Like, you know, high school or below, you know, kids for school sanctioned events, they just have to notify us. The school has to notify us, or the solicitor has to notify us. We won't do a background check, but we'll basically just say.
I think you need to, like, exclude college.
Okay.
But, you know, like, grade school, junior high school, school-sanctioned fundraising events. Okay. So then it can be specific to, and do you want to just leave it for Yorkville schools? Because there are kids that come from out of jurisdiction.
I would be much more comfortable saying that it is a school within the...
city limits?
No. Yorkville,
because it's not just city limits, we got students.
Yes, and we have private schools that are Yorkville schools. Yeah. That service the greater area. Yeah. So I'd be willing to say, I don't want to tread on other people's boundaries, but it's kind of the Y115 district boundaries.
Yeah.
Because that's really what we're getting at, is we want it to be Yorkville. Yorkville school district is almost all encompassing of the city limits. I know that gets a little challenging, Mark, but.
Yeah, I'm wondering if Kathy would say that violates some sort of like, way that we're regulatory it. But I will run that by her. We'll draft something for the remainder of it, break that committee, if that's okay.
I guess, actually, the way to probably be equitable on that one is there's no requirement for those who are within our boundaries, but if you're outside the boundaries, then you have to do a background check.
Right. I think that's an issue, so we'll see.
I mean, then you're actually given the opportunity, you're just not outright excluding them.
So we're saying for-profit organizations do have to register, like if they're out with the judo club trying to do a fundraiser or something along those lines.
Yeah, I think that's the way to do it.
Okay, yeah, we'll draft something and bring it back to committee, if that's okay.
Sounds good. Appreciate it. All right, 7 we already did. Admin 2023-08, Beecher Park School District discussion. This was under the supplemental information.
Yep. So Tim's got a memo in the packet. The superintendent had approached the mayor 2 weeks ago and said, we're ready to do this facilities study and rollout. We've got some ideas for the football field we want to run past you. So we set up a meeting with him. It was me, Tim. He basically pitched it as, here's what we think we want to do. It was like a phase one, phase two, phase three in the packet. Phase one, they have some funding for, and it's all within their property, no question on that. Phase two and three portions that would actually be on our property, they don't have funding for it yet identified, so they still have to go through a lot of their own internal things. But they wanted to make sure that, you know, we would even consider it before they started to think through those things. Tim Evans seemed to think that it would actually be a net positive for us to have that permanent parking lot there. That area in general will be used for home games anyway, so if it was paved, it would make things a little bit easier. What it does displace is a couple t-ball fields, which is a seasonal thing, so not a huge deal. But they are in the process at staff level of working through, can we actually just move the t-ball fields over to east of the football field? There's school district property there that they're going to improve and then use for track and field and soccer practice and stuff. The superintendent seemed interested in allowing that to happen. So in general, the proposal was, this is your property, we want to do it, we'll pay to build it, we'll pay to maintain it, indefinitely, but we'd like to do it. So we said, yeah, let's run that by a couple of committees before we get to the intergovernmental agreement stage of discussion, just to see what everybody thinks.
We're open for discussion. Ken? I know you're on because you want to listen to this one as well. So if you want to chime in too, feel free. Anybody else?
More parking is needed. It's brutal there on Saturdays during baseball season, especially when there's a football game. It's brutal. So if that opens up more spots for more cars, that's fine. And I don't think you're talking displacing the t-ball fields. These would stay, right? These are just the open grass between.
The open grass areas are used for t-ball fields.
But just for practice. So they're not actually fields.
No,
just
they are used for.
I think they're used fields. For.
They use t-ball games there?
To the extent that those are, real games.
Yeah. Even though the topography of it is like this?
The ones that they do just off to the west in the actual basin there?
Yeah.
Non-structured fields?
Yeah.
You're talking about the one just north of the entrance there?
Yes.
Okay, yeah.
Is that
same west of the park?
Yeah, same kind of thing. Okay. West of the
so it's like playground. The Todd Sports t-ball.
Like, yes, it's not the real t-ball. Okay. Like, you're out there coaching. It's
hurting cats.
Yeah, exactly. So the terrain doesn't matter. I agree, parking is absolutely necessary. My concern is proximity to the fields and just the circulation. How long till we're in the new building?
Tentatively planning for like a March move in, that is in flux and
not a guarantee.
Hard deadline. Yeah. So,
my initial reaction when I saw this was it's just too close. If they need to have an immediate need, this building, this site is going to be unoccupied in months. I would much rather this site be repurposed. If they're going to do something to basically do 2.5 times that amount of parking on this site, if they want to raise the building and reconfigure it. I mean, even if they just took the parking lots and kept the building, there's still enough to do more parking than what they're proposing there on this site. And they could make more benefit, a better circulation with the existing parking lot that's there. I think that's a better plan than competing on the fields that we already have. Out there. I mean, they're just, it's too close to the fields for my comfort. Every time we turn around, we're jamming things into these parks. If this site's going to become vacant, why not work with them on this site? They're going to get more use out of this site. I mean, they really need parking. I did pickup for kids today in 25 minutes to do a pickup. They need more. Parking better circulation. I think this site would help. I'm not inclined to do this parking lot next to our fields.
You think they'd get more spots here?
Yes, I think they would. And there's a matter of if they raise the building or keep it or work around it, but there's enough land with the front area. If you basically think about it, you could do a continuous a loop all the way around this building because they've got the drive up on the south side. You can go all three sides and continue a parking lot all the way around. You're going to need a lot more parking.
If they came to you and said, we want to use this for an office building, we don't want to raise it, we need the office building spaces for office space parking, would you be opposed to that still?
No, if they want to come in and, you know, the back area here where there's the grass and everything, blow that out, blow the parking lot, and just make it part of the existing parking lot there. You know, because you can do a lot with that. And then wrap it around the building next to the library parking lot. There's a lot more space that can be used. And that's really what they need, is something that makes that parking lot more efficient, that drive lane more efficient. I mean, I think there'd be more benefit to that. Even if they want to keep this building in place, I think they should raise the building. But
are they taking this building?
We don't know that.
I know. There's no...
They've expressed interest in it.
Yeah.
It's always been a discussion of, you know, they've got various uses for it, they're interested in buying it, but, you know, we have to get out of here. Things have to progress.
But you said, you know, whether it's March, April, May, June, I mean, construction for the school won't happen until summer.
Right.
So if they're talking a new parking lot, it's not going to happen until late May, June, July, August.
Well, I think that's an even later phase. Like,
well, no. I'm sorry, yes.
Because they're not doing all of this.
The parking lot is phase three. So that would be a later phase.
Like, it wouldn't be for another year.
So, yeah, their first phase is the fields.
Right.
So
get the turf and expand the bleachers.
Yeah, so. And then, yeah, to do the parking lot. So timing really does work. I mean, if they find funding, they can move it up. Because if this does become vacant,
they did you say find money?
What was that?
Do no, they find money?
If they can find money.
Don't they have money they're spending that they have to spend as part of a grant?
They're doing
all sorts of work on other buildings.
But they phrased it as they only have funding identified for phase one. And phase two and phase three they would have to do some thinking about before. So they did say that if we were excited about it, you know, because of, you know, our own use of the parking lot too, they were like, you know, they might move that up to priority, but it depends on what everybody thinks.
I prefer to keep open space, but, you know, I didn't think about tearing this place down as a viable option.
I like the additional parking, but keep in mind, it's like a dead end loop. We already have a very bad dead end. It's not really a dead end loop, but it's a terrible loop with the parking as it is. So if we could get them into this space, repurpose this site, that would be fantastic. I would love us to do that instead of not having a plan.
Okay, park board is reviewing this tomorrow night anyway, so get their feedback.
Ken? Okay.
Yeah, I just wanted to... I wanted just to hear what the conversation was, because I'm going to go to park board tomorrow night to hear what they're going to discuss. So.
Sounds good. Appreciate that. All right. Any other comments on that one?
Nope.
All right. We have no old business. Additional business. The library has been an issue that's been brought up. Obviously, it was brought up in public comment, but I've heard from a board member, and I know it's always been an issue about the maintenance of that building. And we've gone back and forth on discussions with how they get their funding, their levy, how do we structure that, and should the city pitch in, what's the city's obligation for that building. I just want to kind of have a discussion on that as to do we want to open dialogue on this one. I don't know if you've had conversations, Bart, with the library. Are they going to be asking us for anything in particular, or is it just kind of a, we know we have problems, we don't have a solution?
Let me answer, maybe. We know that there are various issues over there, like there is any other building. What we've been working with them on, both Steve and Ted, and the rest of the staff that have helped out, is just, you know, working through the existing issues, figuring out like a punch list of what needs to be done, and then specifically on the HVAC units, just various states of repair and issues that have been occurring, unrelated to the pipe burst, even before that. So what Steve has been doing is actually he's hired different firms to go out there and analyze the HVAC systems to be able to rule out issues before they come back to us and say, we've ruled everything out and the solution is to replace it or to replace this big part or whatever it ends up being. So we haven't gotten there yet. And what my message has been to Shelley has been, you have an existing budget, it has funding in there, they have reserves. We also have an existing budget, there's funding in there for different building maintenance things, we have reserves too. The conversation I'm assuming would be open between the two parties about what needs to be done. If there's millions of dollars of maintenance that are needed there, that's more of a big picture community issue than it is, just fighting over who needs to, pay for it out of their budget. And so that's been the answer, is like, let's diagnose the problem first, figure out how much it's going to cost, and then we'll figure something else out after the fact. So I've left the door open basically to us contributing in some way, but then I also haven't said, oh yeah, we'll split it 50-50 or we'll give you, 10 grand. I basically said, we need to know what the problem is and how much it's going to cost to fix before we have that conversation.
Because this is such an interesting dynamic because they have their own ability to levy a tax.
Yep.
So their budget is based on what they need to run their operations to take care of the library. Now, we contribute, we take care of the exterior, we plow, we take care of the landscape, I should say. The actual building structure is to be the library's budget. Do we take care of the parking lot, actually?
Some of it, yeah. Some of it they've done themselves, hired firms to do, so, yeah.
So it's kind of this is a challenging piece because yes, it is a city building, but they have some autonomy from us. I don't want to just like kick them off to the side and say, you guys are kind of the redhead stepchild. I mean, that's not really, they are part of the city. They are in the city. They just have a taxing ability.
And they max it out every year.
Exactly, which you love, Genevieve. I see you kind of.
Yeah, we've capped it every year. Too.
Yes.
So they are still, they have a healthy reserve, and they've been doing that too. So, and this is just me, and I don't think, it would be reasonable if there's a giant project out there for us to figure out either how to finance it with them or to give them a contribution depending on the longevity of the building and, just a general, understanding of how we need to partner with them moving forward. But it's not, send us the bill, we'll pay 50%. It's, let's figure out what the problem is jointly, and then if one of us can't afford it, or if one of us thinks the other person should pay for it, let's have a conversation. Honestly, I don't anticipate it to be an issue. We've gotten along extremely well with both the staff and the board in recent months, and so I actually look forward to figuring out what it is and being able to say, let's jointly figure this out.
Yeah, I think Shelley has done a great job in terms of having a better dialogue with us in working out these issues. There are potentially some big line items on their maintenance budget, which is going to be a challenge for them. Now, proper budgeting, you're planning for these things with your reserves, and that's something you need to plan for. That's where I do struggle a little bit in terms of their autonomy financially. So this is going to be a discussion we have to have as to, do we help them out, or do we make them stand on their own 2 feet? I don't want to cut them off.
Allowances?
Right. So I want to keep this open because, like I said, one of the board members reached out to me. It came up in public. And in public comment, I'm not going to correct somebody when I say something, but it's not necessarily directly our issue. Yes, they are part of the city, but it's not our responsibility 100%. We have to look out for them. So I appreciate you having the conversation with them and keep us posted, because they are listening.
I did confer with John, though, and I will be filling in as a liaison to the board, so one more.
You know what you're going to hear about? HVAC problems, the boilers, the maintenance of the building.
It's
gutters.
90% of all their board meetings are dealing with how do we keep this building running. Mm-hmm. And I think for the last at least 4 years now, they've just been throwing money at it rather than solving the problem. If they solve the problem, they'll probably end up saving them money in the long run, and they'll be more efficient in their board meetings.
They talk about all the trees growing in the gutters. Well, go out and get some leaf guards. You know, you have some solutions to dealing with those kind of things.
Yeah, I think it's really improved in the last several months, especially with the hiring of Ted. He's been out there, you know, a certain amount of hours per week, and I know Steve has spent a fair amount of time out there too. So some of that, I think, board level dialogue hopefully has been a little bit more focused and less wandering recently. Okay. Well, something to strive for.
I did take on DK FD2 as a liaison.
You want the school board as well?
No, my place.
All right. Anything else? Let's adjourn to 7:12.
See what they have to say at the next school board meeting about the football stadium.